Reaching into your community, the Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
Great excitement here in Australia and in Germany and in the United States as the GRACE satellites were launched. Now, you may remember that we did cover the purpose of the mission several weeks ago. So let's go across now to the launch center in Vandenberg, where SpaceX commentator is about to tell us what the mission's about.
Good afternoon from SpaceX headquarters in Hawthorne, California. Welcome to the webcast of the Iridium 6 and GRACE follow-on missions. We're flying five Iridium Next satellites to join the 50 satellites previously placed in orbit over the last 16 months. In addition, we are flying the GRACE follow-on mission made up of two satellites. GRACE stands for Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment. Today's launch is scheduled for 19 hours, 47 minutes, 58 seconds Universal Time, or 12:47, 58 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. I'm John Innsbrucker, the Falcon Principal Integration Engineer, and I'm broadcasting from the mezzanine at lunchtime here at SpaceX headquarters, overlooking our Launch Support Center. And I'll be providing you updates throughout today's launch and flight. Now, today's mission will be different from most of our flights. We're deploying satellites into two different orbits. So once we get into the first orbit, stay with us as the GRACE satellites will be deployed just over 11 minutes after launch, followed by the Iridium Next satellites 55 minutes later.
Here on Southern FM, we're looking at the launch of the GRACE satellites, and here's how the countdown went and the permission to launch.
AFTS is ready for launch.
F9 is in startup.
LD, go for launch.
T-minus 30.
20.
Flight tanks configured for flight.
15. 10. 9. 8. 7. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Vehicle switching downrange.
Stage 1 props nominal.
GC copies, we'll go.
And a little while later, we heard that they had successfully gone into orbit.
Cook, LOS, expected.
Tico.
We've had shutdown of the second stage engine. We're going to wait for call out on the orbit.
Nominal parking, orbit insertion.
And what we like to hear on the speakers in the background, nominal parking, orbit insertion. The first burn of the second stage is complete, but stay with us, because in less than a minute, we're going to be coming up on separation and deployment of the two GRACE follow-on satellites.
And we did hang on, and this is what we heard.
GRACE payload deploy confirmed.
We have confirmation of deployment of the GRACE follow-on satellites. So we're through the first major milestone today. The first satellites have been deployed. We're now going into a coast phase with the second stage with the five Iridium Next satellites still attached. So currently, everything looking good on Falcon 9.
And the question then was, well, would the satellites work now that they are in orbit? Well, a bit later on, we had some news from Antarctica.
Also, as a note, while we're in the coast phase over Antarctica, the customer has confirmed their ground station in Antarctica has made contact with the GRACE follow-on satellites. So that indicates we had good separation of those satellites, and they are now talking to their ground station.
Well, one of the people that was really on tenterhooks for that launch was Professor Daniel Shattuck. He's from the Department of Quantum Science at the Research School of Physics and Engineering. That's the College of Physical and Mathematical Sciences at the Australian National University. Welcome to the Space Show, Daniel.
Thanks very much.
Now, for those listeners who missed our explanation of the GRACE mission in a show a couple of weeks ago, could you give us a quick summary of the objectives of these satellites, please?
Sure. So So GRACE is a gravity mission, so it uses something called geodesy to measure and map the gravitational field of the Earth. And basically the way that you do this is you put up a satellite and you see how it wobbles as it goes round and round the Earth. And if you can measure those wobbles very, very precisely, then you can sort of undo the problem mathematically to figure out where the mass is around the Earth that caused the gravity, that caused the wobbles. So basically GRACE comes down to measuring the position or changes in the position of satellites really, really accurately using the best technology that we have. So the reason that you would want to measure the Earth's gravity, well, there's a couple of reasons you might want to do that. One of the things is if you just want to map the Earth's gravity to find out how dense different parts of the Earth is. So, for example, where there's mountains and valleys, obviously the gravity is different. But one of the really interesting things that GRACE does is it measures the changes in gravity from 1 month to the next very, very accurately. And what that tells you is how mass moves around the surface of the Earth from 1 month to the next. And the only thing that really moves around on a large scale, on those timescales, is water. The GRACE turns out to be a hydrology mission that measures where water is by effectively weighing different parts of the Earth as it goes round and round and round.
Have we been able to use that in Australia?
Yeah, so the great thing about GRACE is that because of the nature of the orbit, so GRACE is in a polar orbit, so that means it goes basically from the South Pole to the North Pole and around again. And then you can imagine it going round and round and round every 90 minutes. And then slowly the Earth is turning underneath that satellite's orbit. And so once a day, the Earth goes around, it spins around. And so over a period of a day, we get many, many passes all over the Earth. And so GRACE measures the gravity over the entire globe. Of course, there's gaps in between those lines. So over the course of about 30 days, it comes back and colours in between the lines, if you like. And that gives us complete coverage of anywhere on the globe. So that's one of the really nice things about GRACE is that although it was launched by NASA and Germany, with some help from Australia on designing some of the technology, it gives people access to the data wherever they may live. So in fact, you can go onto the website at ANU, grace.anu.au, and there's a Google Maps interface that lets you click on your house and see how the groundwater, for example, has changed at your address over the last 15 years.
Oh, fantastic. Now, what has been your involvement in this project?
So GRACE was originally launched, the first GRACE mission, and GRACE stands for Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment. The original GRACE was launched in 2002, and that was the year that I first started working at NASA. So I worked at the Jet Propulsion Lab, and when I turned up, there was sort of this legendary talk about one of these faster, better, cheaper missions, and it was the only one that NASA had done that actually was faster, better, and cheaper. So the people around GRACE were sort of legends at JPL for the years that I was there. And it turned out to be such a successful mission in terms of not just the technology, but the science that came from this mission, that people wanted to put up another one so we could have continuity of data. And so originally they wanted to just put up an exact copy. And the way GRACE works is there's actually two satellites that go around the Earth. And when they pass over, they're about 200 kilometres apart. And when they come up to a region where the mass might be slightly more dense or less dense, the spacecraft velocities will change. The first one will change as it goes over that area, and then the second one changes. And so the measurement is about measuring the distance between these two satellites, 200 kilometres apart, very accurately. So the best way to measure stuff now is actually using a different technology from the original radio frequency measurement, and that's using lasers. And that's where my expertise and the expertise of my group at ANU comes in. We are actually experts in measuring distances with lasers for a completely different application, and that's for measuring something called gravitational waves. So you may have heard of gravitational waves. The LIGO group that we're part of won the Nobel Prize in Physics last year, and it was something that Einstein predicted and comes from the deep, deep universe. And so we've been working on this laser measurement technology for literally decades here in Australia. And then when the opportunity came up to say, hey, maybe we could even do better with the GRACE follow-on mission, replaced or at least augmented this microwave technology that measures the distance with this new laser technology, we could perhaps do 10 or 20 or 50 times better than the original GRACE measurement. The challenge was that doing lasers in space is very, very risky and very, very hard to be 100% sure it's all going to work because it's still fairly new putting lasers up in space. And so what NASA and the German collaborators decided was they would put up the original microwave instrument, but they were going to give us a little bit of space on there to put a new whiz-bang laser-ranging interferometer that would take all the technology that we developed for gravitational waves and allow us to apply it to this application that was a lot closer to home. And so that's what we did. There was actually a meeting at ANU in 2011 that a guy called Mike Watkins, who was the NASA project scientist for GRACE, and I think you had an interview with him last week, or some audio from Mike, and he came to Australia with a group of scientists from JPL and from Germany. And we locked ourselves in a room for a few days, and we designed how the laser ranging here. Then we all went away, and we all went on different. I was given a grant of about $5 million from the Australian government to partner with CSIRO, other Earth scientists from the ANU, and people from a private company, EOS Space Systems in Canberra, that had the expertise that we needed to develop the technology and to test it, to flight qualify it, and then ultimately, hopefully, build it to go on the Unfortunately, we didn't have a space agency at the time, and we do now, or we're just about to, and so we weren't able to provide the flight hardware from Australia, but we did a lot of the very early work of prototyping how that would work, space qualifying the technology, and there's really, it was an amazing experience to be part of that group in Australia that had all this expertise of people came out of the woodwork to provide the technology that was really world-leading at that stage, and now the things that we've developed have been rebuilt for flight, and now they're flying in orbit around the Earth.
So you were working mainly with the Germans, the DLR, rather than NASA at this stage?
No, we worked very closely with both. In fact, in both groups, both in JPL in Pasadena, California, and in the German groups, there were some of the very senior and very key team members were Australians who had gone out. And in fact, Mike Hawkins, who's now the director of JPL, he's now been promoted to the top job at JPL based on past successes. He commented on the Australian mafia that we have in this laser measurement technology that we've embedded people all around the world. So we work very closely with JPL. In fact, most of my students who graduate from ANU end up getting job offers at JPL. It's a fantastic place to work, amazing things going on there. So we delivered some of the optical laser metrology technology to Germany for testing, and we also provided algorithms to the guys at the Jet Propulsion Lab that would help basically decode the information that was coming in on the laser, and that's some of those algorithms are now getting ready to be deployed in space.
So once again, what are some of the advantages of the laser ranging method that you're introducing over the previous method I've used to track the GRACE satellites?
So the way that the previous method worked is it basically had a quite a broad radio frequency beam that would shoot between the spacecraft, and that beam had that wavelength was about a centimeter or so. And you can think of the wavelength of the field that you're using to make the measurement as kind of like the tick marks on a ruler. So if you can have much finer tick marks, you can get a much more sensitive measurement. So that's the first advantage of using a laser versus using radio frequencies, is for a laser, the wavelength of a laser is about a thousandth of a millimeter for the lasers that we use. And so that means you just get a much finer measurement and can make much, much smaller, distinguish between much, much smaller changes in the displacement. The second big advantage is it comes in that when you have a shorter wavelength, a laser beam can be focused or collimated to a very, very narrow beam, even with a very, very small telescope. So using a small telescope of only a few millimeters across is enough to get enough power between the two spacecraft 200 meters apart. Whereas for a radio frequency beam, the divergence of that beam is so large that we lose the vast majority of the beam, and therefore it consumes a lot more power. This is why people are very interested in lasers for deep space communications, where you have spacecraft perhaps around Jupiter, and with only a very, very small amount of power usage, they can provide a very collimated beam back to Earth and have very, very high data rates to get all the scientific data back from whatever mission we choose to launch in the future. So those are really the two big advantages. There are lots of challenges with it, with a laser. The technology can be a bit finicky. There's a lot of new things that we had to develop. The biggest challenge actually was that we had to fit in with the existing spacecraft. It's a big risk if we made any changes from the original GRACE mission to GRACE follow-on. And so we were given some pretty tiny constraints about where the laser beam was allowed to leave and enter the spacecraft, where we were allowed to put our hardware. And so there were some really clever ideas came out of the guys at JPL, out of Australia and also out of Germany, on how to fit this brand new technology around what was already quite a busy, full spacecraft that was bristling with many, many, many different technologies and electronics propellant tanks. It really was a big challenge. If we had a clean slate, it would have been a lot easier. And we're hoping if the laser ranging interferometer works well this time, then for the next GRACE mission, which will probably launch in about 10 or 15 years, depending on how long this mission lasts, that the laser will be promoted away from being just a backup instrument or a technology demonstrator to being the primary science instrument. And that will mean we can do a lot more and make it a lot more effective and reliable.
To help our listeners visualise the satellites, how big are they?
The satellites, it's sort of like a small refrigerator, I guess. So they're enough that they can stack together in the fairing of the SpaceX launch vehicle. So about a metre and a half long and maybe 75 centimetres wide. They have at the front of them, they're basically covered with solar panels on one side. And they have a couple of really key technologies that allow it to make the measurement. One of the challenges is that you have to be able to separate all of the gravitational effects from everything else that's going on. And although they are 500 kilometres high in their orbit, there's actually still quite a bit of atmosphere up there. And when you're moving around at thousands of kilometres an hour, even a small amount of atmosphere means that you get quite a lot of buffeting. If you drive your car at 100 kilometres down the freeway and you stick your head out the window, you'll know what I'm talking about. But now imagine going tens of times faster than that. So they have these accelerometers inside, which basically are there to measure everything that doesn't come from gravity. And that has to be put very, very closely. That has to be situated very, very close to the centre of mass of the spacecraft. So GRACE had some really unique requirements in terms of where things were positioned, how accurately they could be positioned, and even on how much the centre of mass of the spacecraft was allowed to change. As you launch things into space in a vacuum, carbon fibre in particular has an effect called outgassing, where a lot of the epoxy that's used to build it simply evaporates. And that can change the mass of these objects by a few percent in the worst case, and that can move the centre of mass, which then would cause problems for GRACE because it's such a sensitive gravitational measurement. So for the original GRACE and for GRACE follow-on, there was a whole range of really clever techniques that were invented specifically for these gravity missions that no other mission before had ever acquired. It's really about half a dozen of these techniques that were brand new to GRACE, and I'm still quite amazed that the original GRACE works, and I'm still got my fingers crossed that this GRACE follow-on will go as planned.
And when do you expect to find out whether your laser ranging system is working?
Well, so there's a system of different turn-ons and tests that they do. So one of the tests they have to do when they get up on in orbit is they have to redetermine where the centre of mass of the spacecraft is relative to the accelerometer. Ideally, the accelerometer is positioned right at the centre of mass, but after launch, when things get shaken up, the centre of mass can move in an unpredictable way. And so what happens over the next few weeks is they'll do a bunch of calibration manoeuvres where they'll jiggle the spacecraft around and measure that jiggling with the accelerometer, and that will allow them to determine if they've got that part right. And if they don't, there's a few little masses in there that they can spin around to move in and out to trim the position and centre of mass. That will probably take a few weeks. The first test of the laser ranging interferometer, well, the turn-on will happen in about a week and a half from now if everything else goes well. And then after that, the really critical part for the interferometer is what's called the acquisition, and that's where the laser beams point at each other across 200 kilometres for the first time, and we try and see if we can detect one of the beams from the other spacecraft with the other. Like, as I mentioned before, one of the advantages of using laser beams is they have this very narrow divergence, so that if you shine the beam from, say, Canberra to Sydney, it would only diverge by about 10 or 20 metres. It would be 20 metres wide by the time it got there. The problem with that, though, is that now we have to point the spacecraft incredibly accurately to make sure that the laser beam doesn't just miss the other spacecraft entirely. And that's a really big risk, and that's something that we worked a lot on here at ANU. In fact, I've got probably several of my PhD students have devoted their careers so far to solving this problem. And so that's the real exciting moment for us here, is once we can acquire that laser lock, acquire the link, then we'll be ready to relax a bit and maybe have a celebratory beer with the team. That's due to happen probably late June, early July, if everything goes well. So there's still a little bit of time here to keep nibbling on our fingernails.
Oh, thanks, Daniel, for joining us on the Space Show.
Thanks very much.
And I was talking there with Professor Daniel Shattuck from the Department of Quantum Science at the Australian National University in Canberra.